Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, it is my pleasure to welcome a very accomplished professional manager turned entrepreneur, Mr. Damandeep Singh Soni. Daman, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on the show, Ashutosh.
Daman is an engineer. He's from the Indian School of Business. His last three roles were with MobiQuick, WeCash, and Milk Basket. And he's now an advisor for marketing and growth for startups. Daman, what would you say are three key milestones in your career?
It's a very interesting question. So I kind of reinvented myself exactly three times. So when I first graduated, I ended up in Infosys. That was like, you know, Bheti Ganga. So everyone just entered there. I was in the US and servicing a lot of clients. I decided to come back to India to do my MBA, mm-hmm. although I had got into a bunch of US universities. I thought I'll try to make my next set of living in India. Came back, did my MBA from ISB, joined Nokia. And then I kind of figured out that there's a bit of a cultural fit for me here. And I relocated myself this time to the UK. On a sales role, and a business development role, and this was an entire new country for me, zero connect, nothing. And my boss said, "Go get me some business." Mm-hmm. So that was a very good trial by fire. And the third time, the third milestone for me was when I got back to India. Okay. 4.5 years in Infosys, I said, "Okay, I am not learning anything more. Let me come back and up my risk." And I got back in 2009 and turned entrepreneur. And I decided that startup is the space I want to be. And ever since then, it's been a roller coaster ride for the last decade. So it's and interestingly, my initial 4 to 5 years of experience comes very handy because I'm in the tech space and having written code for a good amount of time, I kind of understand the possibilities that can happen even now. Right. And the kind of industries that I'm in, I usually work for the underdog. There's not enough resources and stuff like that. So being a marketer and trying to get deep into tech, I think it's a big asset that I have with me.
So tell me, you're now an advisor and advising startups for marketing and growth. Tell me a little bit about the kind of work you are doing now.
Okay. There's a bit of an update. I recently joined as the growth head for Boat earphones, Boat okay. Audio. And advising to startups is something I very actively do even now. Mm-hmm. And the kind of problem that I solve is very simple. There are startups which are three-member startups who just launching that, how do I get my first 1,000 customers? Mm-hmm. There are startups who have reached X crores a month. They say, how do we 10X our business from here? And how do we use the marketing function and the growth function to leverage that? Okay. So that's where I come in and devise a whole set of short-term strategies and long games, mm-hmm. which play out in the landscape over the next 5 to 6 months and bring out actually step changes in the company. So that's typically the space that I really enjoy being.
So, you've been primarily, if I can use the term, in technology marketing. And, you spend time in Milk Basket as well. Tell me what goes into building a successful technology brand or a successful brand?
It's not very different from the core tenets of building any brand. Mm-hmm. A brand basically signifies trust with the consumer. So, I always believe in this, that a brand is built by the search effect, which is people recognize your logo, they see your ad. And the second is it's built by the experience effect. Okay. Once they bought your product, and how do they experience the product or the service? That is equally, if not more important to building the brand. The thing about being in the technology realm is you get real-time telemetry talking to you 24/7. Mm-hmm. Right from the time when the user is searching for a brand, I know exactly which platforms he is on, what where he's traversing around, and what his moment of truth is going to be when he's going to buy. And once he started consuming the service, the technology enables me to figure out what is that aha moment for the user when he says, okay, you know, I want to keep continuing this this product. So for me, I think marketing has data has kind of become like a bad habit. You know, I remember a long time ago, marketers did not have a lot of data talking back to them. It was a lot of intuition. It was a lot of post-facto analysis. Here is something which I don't, if I don't get real-time data talking to me, you know, I kind of get jittery. I think the baggage, or I think the good habit or the bad habit I carry from launching brands in the technology space, wherein a lot of data is talking back to you simultaneously. You need to figure out what data to listen to and how to, you know, tweak your campaigns and go on from there.
Fair enough. So, you know, in the world of brands, unless they're one of these really iconic brands, have a reasonably short lifetime. You've got to keep investing over and over again.
Yeah.
In the technology space as well, if you remove those big four or five names, what do you have to keep doing to make sure that your brand lives for a long period of time?
Okay, so see, there's this paradigm. Earlier when brands were created, there was the mode of communication was one way. The brand could talk a lot and there wasn't that much competition also, frankly, right? In terms of creating a brand. The big barrier over there was money. If you have enough money, you can go on to the only medium that can reach a million people, which is newspaper and TV, and you can talk about your brand. Although there are a lot of smaller companies who are doing something very awesome also. Today, this whole thing has been democratized. It's never been easier to launch a brand. It's never been more difficult to make it a long-term sustainable brand. Because today, what are the three things, you know, three or four things that we need to launch a brand? You need a good product. Today, R&D is democratized. I can figure out how to build or how to, you know, rapidly prototype. Second is capital. I do not need access to capital from banks or from equity only. I have venture capital and I have angel investors to start helping me launch the brand. And third is media. Today, TV is not the only medium. With even 5,000 rupees, I can start experimenting whether people on my target audience on Facebook or on Insta, you know, would like to talk to me about my brand. So what's happening is you're now, the user is now seeing over 1,000 brands talking to him on one particular day, as opposed to, you see, 20, 25 years ago, we still remember the Nirma ad. We still remember, a bunch of iconic ads.
Correct.
The thumbs up ad. But today the noise has increased a lot, even on Facebook or even on digital, because every brand is trying to talk to you. So for you to differentiate yourself, it's a lot of, you know, weight has to be picked up by the product or the service itself. No, you cannot hope to build a long lasting brand with a mediocre product and a loud campaign.
Correct.
I cannot sell sugar water and say, okay, now I can create an iconic brand today because there are 10 more people selling it.
Well said. So that's a very interesting segue to my next question, which is that how can brands succeed in this incredibly fast nanosecond-based digital world?
So let me give you another paradigm here, okay? Earlier, we used to not converse with the brands, right? Today, conversation is a very important aspect of brand. I think in a lot
of... Give me an example of conversation for our viewers and listeners.
Okay, so let me take an example of Trek Cycles, for example, right? They have a community going around with them. Now, a cycle is a machine which frequently breaks down also because there's a lot of wear and tear. The community itself comes together to help you source your spare parts. The community, the brand itself says, you know, this is a bunch of people who all love us. We are okay that these guys talk. And in case you guys are stuck, then we can come and help you. So the trust is now happening two ways. Okay, and the conversation is being encouraged between the community. If the brand goes and says, you know what, I'm going to control the conversation. I'm going to delete all the bad comments and stuff like that on Twitter. Then people kind of know that this brand is kind of faking it. So the conversation aspect of a brand has increased manifold. Okay, earlier, think about it. If you did not like a Nirma packet, when did you expect, you didn't expect someone to write a letter to the board, right, saying that you didn't like. But here, if you don't like something, up goes a tweet or a message into your customer care section. And if you're not fast enough to respond it, there's a follow-on message, which kind of starts, you know, creating chinks in the, in the brand armor. So I think one is getting the conversations going, but obviously this is other than the table stakes that I'm saying in terms of, you know, creating a brand promise, building something long-term, delivering on what your promise is and not breaking it. So these are the new paradigms which we are really facing in the digital world today, which wherein a lot of brands are talking to you and you know, the ones that get you conversing. And so the more you converse, the more you build loyalty and love for the brand. I think those are the brands which are really going to, you know, take it forward.
Yep, that's very well said. So let me move to, you know, some of your own roles in the digital world. You spend time with payment platforms and you've spent time with an e-commerce platform. Between payment platforms and an e-commerce platform, how is this entire digital ecosystem changing the way the traditional FMCG brands have been selling?
So here is the interesting thing. In the digital ecosystem, every 6 months, a new channel comes across, which enables a marketer to talk to the TG in a new, in a different way, right? Let me give an example, which probably you're not very aware of. Have you heard of Discord? Discord is a messaging app which kids use who are into gaming.
Okay,
and a lot of brands who are trying to attract gamers are part of Discord communities. Okay, Snapchat as a medium did not exist in India a year ago for brands to talk to their audiences. And the means to talk to the audience is very different. It's not I'm going to put an ad and get on with it, right? I have to create a video and I have to create a vertical video. We've seen how brand videos are shot over the year, right? It's always been a horizontal section by 9, but here it is, you're telling you to fit everything vertically and, you know what, keep it between 15 seconds and give your message. So it's very interesting times. Now, FMCG companies, they're also innovating in trying to talk to users, innovate. And I'm talking more on the comms side here, but there's a lot of other stuff also. But it's the smaller brands who are natively born in this era, who kind of get all these mediums pretty, natively. So they kind of have an advantage. Okay. I never see an FMCG, a leading FMCG player utilizing a new kind of a video inventory, which probably Facebook has launched, which is very engaging and there's a lot written about it. It's usually the innovation on comms is happening by the smaller companies. And FMCGs have become the followers on this particular thing. So it's pretty amazing about that. The other thing, for example, is talking about non-tech and keep sticking to FMCG. A lot of brands have now started using everything and anything they have for communicating the brand ethos. Okay. For example, I love this brand called The Truth Company, which does protein bars. Every piece of material that they use, whether it's online or offline, is used to convey the brand message. Okay. Even the box that they sent. And stuff like this really moves the buyer. The experience of receiving an e-commerce box, the happiness starts from there, right? Rather than opening a brown cardboard box, the happiness starts from even receiving the box. So I think FMCG guys will look at a lot of these ideas and try to incorporate them into their long-term games. But a lot of ideas are coming up from smaller companies.
Okay. So one last question on marketing before I move to the next segment. How are millennials changing the way all these young brands are going to be looking at the future?
The millennials, if you talk about the millennial versus the Gen Xers and the earlier generations, a millennial has access to far more information and can assimilate far more information than what a Gen Xer could do at his point in time, because you can't overnight give a person 5 different streams of data and say, figure out what you want to do. So generation, let me put it that way. So these guys have a lot of opinion formed at a very early age. They have very strong beliefs. Because today we are not solving the problem of roti, kapda and makan. We are solving second order problems and third order problems. And the opinions that they form, the beliefs that they have, are far stronger and far evolved. For brands to connect to them, you just cannot, have a functional benefit. You need to have a long-term emotional benefit, an environmental benefit, or the belief system that these guys operate in. Also, the choices for them to build their beliefs on are also very high. Okay. So brands need to peg themselves with an opinion in a specific direction. You cannot have a very loosely mentioned statement to go after these, because they see through it, right? Even awesome music bands, if they don't stand for a particular brand or a belief, they get beaten up and people know that they're faking it. So with a millennial, like I said, you can launch a new brand, you can get them engaged, but to win them over the long term, that's becoming tougher and tougher.
So let's move to another section. I mean, you've done a lot of work with startups and startup entrepreneurs. My first question is that, based on your experience, what are some of the mistakes startup entrepreneurs make?
I'll talk from my experience.
Yeah.
The first time I started up, and I've seen this in a bunch of guys also, we kind of got stuck up on what our valuation should be, how much we should raise, how much we should dilute. At the early stage, it's a germ of an idea. Someone's willing to back you with a certain amount of money, respect that, take that, and move on. And start building up your company for the long term. So that is one thing which I think a lot of startups still get stuck on. But everyone's got their journey, right? Even when I invest now, I kind of tell you, don't worry about the valuation. It's a few percentage points are not going to make anything different at this point in time. The second thing is, a lot of the time, the core hypothesis for which the company has started is primarily wrong. We understand the need of the consumer, but we don't understand the buying ecosystem, right? Who the influencer is. Because startup by its definition does two things. One is it disrupts. Second is it has to grow fast, right? And for that to come together, the product market fit really needs to come together. And I think a lot of startups just miss out on getting the product market fit right before they start spending a ton of money. They think they can buy their way through. And there are enough stories out there in the market, trying to figure that out.
Sure.
And third most important thing is, I think a startup is not the founder. A startup is the team.
Correct.
And a lot of wrong hires in the early stage have taken companies down. A lot of great hires in the early stage have just skyrocketed the company into the next orbit. So I think in terms of hiring, you really need to, as a founder, you really need to spend a lot of time trying to figure out who your early employees are going to be, and later on when you're in the growth stage, who are the guys who can actually, help you grow. And I don't think domain experience is the answer. While it helps in a certain way, but with startups, you can easily go beyond domain experience to see people who have the grit and the vigor to take the company forward.
What a great answer. So let's move to some questions for you personally.
Okay.
My first question is that, you have changed jobs very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often been asked this question, is it better to stay with one company for a long period of time, or is it better to keep moving quickly to be able to move ahead in the company?
So I'm very clear about that. I think it's if you're having fun and you're enjoying in one place, stick around in that place.
Okay.
So I kind of classify my career wants with three different things. At any given point in time in a company, you get three kinds of wealth. One is monetary wealth, which is the most obvious thing. Second is knowledge wealth. If you're learning, that's the place to be. And the third is network wealth. If you are meeting more and more people who can increase your perspectives, then that is good. If you're hitting two out of three, keep continuing with the job. There's no reason to change. And because that is what eventually brings you happiness in a wholesome way. So for me, shifting multiple jobs has not been by design, but it's the nature of the game in the startup world, right? You take a bet on a startup, you want to grow. Some startups fail. I mean, startups, the null hypothesis in a startup is it's going to fail, right? So at certain points in time, the relationship doesn't work out, mm-hmm. or the startup is not going to a trajectory which was expected, yeah. either by you or the founder. So then you kind of move on and you take one in the chin and move forward. But my funda state, if you are having fun, if you're enjoying, you're passionate about the work, because in startup you're not doing a job, frankly. You are doing something which you fundamentally believe in. So if the belief system goes, then it's time to move on.
Fantastic. So my next question to you is that, you know, after so many years of experience, great academic record, doing things on your own, large companies, what does success mean to Daman?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that, because I measure my success not by the amount of money I've accumulated. That's not how I'm brought up also. Although I think money is important. My success has one key measure. It is how many people I can help to improve, to grow. I actually sometimes sit and figure out how many people can I drive employment to. Because that was the main reason I came back to India, either directly or indirectly. So that is one of the main reasons why a lot of the consulting work that I do is a lot of pro bono work also. Because if a startup improves, there is more employment opportunities for people. So for me, a network of people who I can help in some way or the other, that is what, you know, gives me a lot of happiness. And that is something which, as they go by, I think I'm kind of enjoying that whole journey.
And therefore, my follow-up question to that is that, where do you draw your inspiration from?
So one of my big areas of inspiration is Clayton Christensen, the guy who wrote about disruption. A lot of his ideas were pretty evolved, ahead of its time. He kind of, you know, encompasses about trying to do something disruptive, but also failures on the other side of the coin. So, you know, you got to not get bogged down with failures. And you fail too many times, you only succeed. So, he's one person I draw a lot of information, inspiration from, both on the professional side and also on the personal side. He's no longer with us, God rest his soul. But he's one of the guys.
And my last question to you now. And this question is that if you, Daman, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
Okay. Oh man, this is an awesome thing. So I think procrastination gets the better of me many times, and I call out that I'm a lazy individual. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm lazy, I love to automate stuff a lot. So, sometimes it gets the better of me in terms of procrastinating, and I think that is something which, I think procrastination is acid, literally. That's one thing I would like to get out of my system. So I've been frankly reading a lot on how to do it, instituted a lot of hacks, as I put it. The Atomic Habits is a book which, you know, has helped me a lot in trying to get rid of this this habit. But that's one thing that would really, really, and this is not a Miss India kind of an answer, this is something I genuinely talk about with my wife, that, you know, this is what I want to really solve for.
Daman, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you lots of success with your new brand, Boat, and with everything else that you do. Good luck.
Thanks, Ashutosh. Great talking to you. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.